Chapter 11. The rector, before 12 o'clock, there had been some heavy storms of rain, and the water lay in deep gutters on the sides of the gravel walks in the garden of Broxton Parsonage. The great Provence roses had been cruelly tossed by the wind and beaten by the rain, and all the delicate stem border flowers had been dashed down, and stained with the wet soil. A melancholy morning, because it was nearly time a harvest should begin, and instead of that the meadows were likely to be flooded. But people who have pleasant homes get indoor enjoyments that they would never think of, but for the rain. If it had not been a wet morning, Mr. Irwin would not have been in the dining room playing at chess with his mother, and he loves both his mother and chess quite well enough to pass some cloudy hours very easily by their help. Let me take you into that dining room and show you the Rev. Adolphus Irwin, rector of Broxton, vicar of Hayslope, and vicar of Blythe, a pluralist at whom the severest church reformer would have found it difficult to look sour. We will enter very softly and stand still in the open doorway without awaking the glossy brown setter who is stretched across the hearth with her two puppies beside her, or the pug, who is dozing, with his black muzzle aloft, like a sleepy president. The room is a large and lofty one, with an ample mullioned oriel window at one end. The walls, you see, are new, and not yet painted. But the furniture, though originally of an expensive sort, is old and scanty, and there is no drapery about the window. The crimson cloth over the large dining table is very threadbare, though it contrasts pleasantly enough with the dead hue of the plaster on the walls. But on this cloth there is a massive silver waiter with a decanter of water on it, of the same pattern as two larger ones that are propped up on the sideboard with a coat of arms conspicuous in their center. You suspect at once that the inhabitants of this room have inherited more blood than wealth, and would not be surprised to find that Mr. Irwin had a finely cut nostril and upper lip. But at present we can only see that he has a broad flat back, and an abundance of powdered hair, all thrown backward, and tied behind with a black ribbon, a bit of conservatism in costume which tells you that he is not a young man. He will perhaps turn round by and by, and in the meantime we can look at that stately old lady, his mother, a beautiful aged brunette, whose rich toned complexion is well set off by the complex wrappings of pure white cambric and lace about her head and neck. She is as erect in her comely embonpoint as a statue of Sears, and her dark face, with its delicate aquiline nose, firm proud mouth, and small, intense, black eye, is so keen and sarcastic in its expression that you instinctively substitute a pack of cards for the chessmen and imagine her telling your fortune. The small brown hand with which she is lifting her queen is laden with pearls, diamonds, and turquoises, and a large black veil is very carefully adjusted over the crown of her cap and falls in sharp contrast on the white folds about her neck. It must take a long time to dress that old lady in the morning, but it seems a law of nature that she should be dressed so. She is clearly one of those children of royalty who have never doubted their right divine, and never met with anyone so absurd as to question it. There, Dauphin, tell me what that is, says this magnificent old lady, as she deposits her queen very quietly and folds her arms. I should be sorry to utter a word disagreeable to your feelings. Ah, you witch mother, you sorceress! How is a Christian man to win a game off you? I should have sprinkled the board with holy water before we began. You've not won that game by fair means now, so don't pretend it. Yes, yes, that's what the beaten have always said of great conquerors. But see, there's the sunshine falling on the board, to show you more clearly what a foolish move you made with that pawn. Come, shall I give you another chance? No, mother, I shall leave you to your own conscience. Now it's clearing up. We must go and plash up the mud a little, mustn't we, Juno? This was addressed to the brown setter, who had jumped up at the sound of the voices and laid her nose in an insinuating way on her master's leg. But I must go upstairs first and see Anne. I was called away to Tholer's funeral, just when I was going before. It's of no use, child. She can't speak to you. Kate says as he has one of her worst headaches this morning. Oh, she likes me to go and see her just the same. She's never too ill to care about that. If you know how much of human speech is mere purposeless impulse or habit, you will not wonder when I tell you that this identical objection had been made, and had received the same kind of answer, many hundred times in the course of the 15 years, that Mr. Irwin's sister Anne had been an invalid. Splendid old ladies, who take a long time to dress in the morning, have often slight sympathy with sickly daughters. But while Mr. Irwin was still seated, leaning back in his chair and stroking Juno's head, the servant came to the door and said, "If you please, sir, Joshua Rann wishes to speak with you, if you are at liberty." "Let him be shown in here," said Mrs. Irwin, taking up her knitting. "Always like to hear what Mr. Rann has got to say. His shoes will be dirty, but see that he wipes them, Carol." In 2 minutes Mr. Rann appeared at the door with very deferential bows, which, however, were far from conciliating Pug, who gave a sharp bark, and ran across the room, to reconnoiter the stranger's legs, while the two puppies, regarding Mr. Rann's prominent calf and ribbed worsted stockings from a more sensuous point of view, plunged and growled over them in great enjoyment. Meantime, Mr. Irwin turned round his chair and said, "Well, Joshua, anything the matter at Hayslip, that you've come over this damn morning? Sit down, sit down. Never mind the dogs. Give them a friendly kick. Here, Pug, you rascal. It is very pleasant to see some men turn round, pleasant as a sudden rush of warm air in winter, or the flash of firelight in the chill dusk. Mr. Irwin was one of those men. He bore the same sort of resemblance to his mother that our loving memory of a friend's face often bears to the face itself. The lines were all more generous, the smile brighter, the expression heartier. If the outline had been less finely cut, his face might have been called jolly, but that was not the right word for its mixture of bonhomie and distinction." "Thank your reverence," answered Mr. Rann, endeavoring to look unconcerned about his legs, but shaking them alternately, "to keep off the puppies. I'll stand, if you please, as more becoming. I hope I see you and Mrs. Irwin well, and Miss Irwin and Miss Anne, I hopes as well as usual." "Yes, Joshua, thank you. You see how blooming my mother looks. She beats us younger people hollow. But what's the matter?" "Why, sir, I had to come to Broxton to deliver some work, and I thought it but right to call and let you know the goings on as there's been I the village, such as I hadna seen I my time, and I've lived in it man and boy 60 year come St. Thomas, and collected th Easter dues for Mr. Blick before your reverence come into the parish, and been at the ringin' o' every bell, and the diggin' o' every grave, and sung I the choir long afore Bartle Massey come from nobody knows where. Why, his counter singin' and fine anthems, as puts everybody out but himself one takin' it up after another like. Sheep a bleatin' ith fold. I know what belongs to bein' a parish clerk, and I know as I should be wantin' I respect to your reverence, and church, and king, if I was to allow such goings on without speakin'. I was took by surprise, and knowed nothing on it beforehand, and I was so flustered, I was clean, as if I'd lost my tools. I hadna slept more nor 4 hour this night as is past and gone, and then it was nothing but nightmare, as tired me worse nor waken. Why, what in the world is the matter, Joshua? Have the thieves been at the church lead again? Thieves? No, sir, and yet, as I may say, it is thieves, and a thief in the church too. It's the Methodists as is like to get th upper hand ith parish, if your reverence and his honor, Squire Donathern, deesna think well to say the word and forbid it. Not as I may dictatin' to you, sir. I'm not forgetting myself so far, as to be wise above my betters. However, whether I'm wise or no, that's neither here nor there, but what I've got to say I say as the young Methodist woman as is at Mr. Poyser's was a preaching and a praying on the green last night, as sure as I may stand in afore your reverence now. Preaching on the green, said Mr. Irwin, looking surprised but quite serene. Hat, that pale pretty young woman I've seen at Poyser's? I saw she was a Methodist, or Quaker, or something of that sort, by her dress, but I didn't know she was a preacher. It's a true word as I say, sir, rejoined Mr. Rann, compressing his mouth into a semicircular form and pausing long enough to indicate three notes of exclamation. He preached on the green last night, and she's laid hold of Chad's Bess, as the girl's been I fits welly ever sin. Well, Bessie Cranage is a hearty-looking lass. I dare say she'll come round again, Joshua. Did anybody else go into fits? No, sir, I canna say as they did. But there's no knowing what'll come. If we're to have such preachings as the day going on every week, there'll be no living ith village. For the Methodists make folks believe, as if they take a mug o' drink extry, and make theirselves a bit comfortable, they'll have to go to hell for it as sure as they're born. I'm not a tippling man nor a drunkard, nobody can say it on me, but I like a extry quart at Easter or Christmas time, as is natural when we're going the rounds a singing, and folks offer to you for nothing, or when I'm a collecting the dues. And I like a pint why my pipe, and a neighborly chat at Mr. Casson's now and then, for I was brought up by the church, thank God, and I've been a parish clerk this 32 year. I should know what the church religion is. Well, what's your advice, Joshua? What do you think should be done? Well, your reverence, I'm not for taking any measures again the young woman. She's well enough, if she'd let alone preaching. And I hear as she's a going away back to her own country soon. She's Mr. Poyser's own niece, and I donna wish to say what's anyways disrespectful O.T.H. family at T.H. Hall Farm, as I've measured for shoes, little and big, welly ever since I've been a shoemaker. But there's that Will Maskery, sir, as is the rampagiousest Methodist as can be, and I make no doubt it was him as stirred up th young woman to preach last night, and he'll be a bringing other folks to preach from Treadlesson, if his comb isn't cut a bit, and I think as he should be let know as he isn't that he have the making and mending o' church carts and implements, let alone stay in I that house and yard as is Squire Donathern's. Well, but you say yourself, Joshua, that you never knew anyone come to preach on the green before, why should you think they'll come again? The Methodists don't come to preach in little villages like Hayslip, where there's only a handful of laborers, too tired to listen to them. They might almost as well go and preach on the Binton Hills. Will Maskery is no preacher himself, I think. Nay, sir, he's no gift at stringing the words together without book. He'd be stuck fast like a cow I wet clay. But he's got tongue enough to speak disrespectful about sneebers, for he said as I was a blind Pharisee a-using the Bible I that way to find nicknames for folks as are his elders and betters. And what's worse, he's been heard to say very unbecoming words about your reverence, for I could bring them as I'd swear as he called you a dumb dog, apostrophe and a idle shepherd. Apostrophe you'll forgy me for saying such things over again. Better not, Joshua. Let evil words die, as soon as they're spoken. Will Maskery might be a great deal worse fellow than he is. He used to be a wild drunken rascal, neglecting his work and beating his wife, they told me. Now he's thrifty and decent, and he and his wife look comfortable together. If you can bring me any proof that he interferes with his neighbors, and creates any disturbance, I shall think it my duty as a clergyman and a magistrate to interfere. But it wouldn't become wise people like you and me to be making a fuss about trifles, as if we thought the church was in danger, because Will Maskery lets his tongue wag rather foolishly, or a young woman talks in a serious way to a handful of people on the green. We must live and let live, apostrophe Joshua, in religion as well as in other things. You go on doing your duty as parish clerk and sexton, as well as you've always done it, and making those capital thick boots for your neighbors, and things won't go far wrong in Aislip, depend upon it. Your reverence is very good to say so, and I'm sensible as you not live in either parish, there's more you owe my shoulders. To be sure, and you must mind, and not lower the church in people's eyes, by seeming to be frightened about it for a little thing, Joshua. I shall trust to your good sense, now to take no notice at all of what Will Maskery says, either about you or me. You and your neighbors can go on taking your pot of beer soberly, when you've done your day's work, like good churchmen. And if Will Maskery doesn't like to join you, but to go to a prayer meeting at Treddleston instead, let him. That's no business of yours, so long as he doesn't hinder you from doing what you like. And as to people saying a few idle words about us, we must not mind that, any more than the old church steeple minds the rooks cawing about it. Will Maskery comes to church every Sunday afternoon, and does his wheelwright's business steadily in the weekdays, and as long as he does, that he must be let alone. Ah, sir, but when he comes to church, he sits and shakes his head, and looks as sour, and as coxy when we're a-singin' as I should like to fetch him a rap across the jowl God for Jimmy and Mrs. Irwin, and your reverence too, for speaking so afore you. And he said as our Christmas singin' was no better, nor the cracklin' o' thorns under a pot. Well, he's got a bad ear for music, Joshua. When people have wooden heads, you know, it can't be helped. He won't bring the other people in Aislip round to his opinion, while you go on singing as well as you do. Yes, sir, but it turns a man's stomach to hear the scripture misused I that way. I know as much o' the words o' the Bible as he does, and could say the Psalms right through I my sleep, if he was to pinch me, but I know better nor to take 'em to say my own say why. I might as well take the sacrament cup home, and use it at meals. That's a very sensible remark of yours, Joshua. But, as I said before, while Mr. Irwin was speaking, the sound of a booted step, and the clink of a spur, were heard on the stone floor of the entrance hall, and Joshua ran moved hastily aside from the doorway, to make room for someone who paused there, and said, in a ringing tenor voice, Godson Arthur, may he come in? Come in, come in, Godson. Mrs. Irwin answered, in the deep half-masculine tone which belongs to the vigorous old woman, and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.